Welcome, everybody. Blessed are those that visit this channel and enjoy the content here.
Right, here I am for another episode of Reflections, and my guest for this one is going to be Robs, obviously of FaZe Clan. Now, we did actually do an interview in the past. It just wasn't a Reflections interview. If you remember, it was in that other series I did called Talk to Thorin, and in it, just to be like a bit cheeky, I even sort of pointed out that like you have to like earn the Reflections interview, because that's like when you've had like a legendary career you've won. And at the time, you have to remember, guys, it's in the online era, all he'd done was, you know, pick up a few of those banana cups, you know, with from fucking Mouse, and he hadn't won the major yet. He hadn't done all the big deal stuff. So I will refer people. We actually covered a lot of the early Mouse Sports period and becoming a pro in that interview. We won't go over it all here. But I do think in Reflections, like the title says, there are some things I would ask about that maybe were in that period that now you might have a different perspective on. So actually the first thing I would just ask is this, Robs, because no one ever does ask you this question, is people know as part of your origin story, that whole thing of you were playing FPL, then everyone's like, he's a cheater, which is like, could be a million players who came into FPL. And then you went to the Face It offices, you proved you were legit, and then you came to Mouse Sports like very briefly afterwards, right? What do you actually think, just it's up to you how you want to answer this, what would have happened if there had never been the whole Face It thing? What do you think if you'd have just still been in FPL? Maybe some people, some pros might still think you're cheap, but you just never went to the Face It offices. Do you think, would you still end up in Mouse? Would your career have still gone the same way? Do you think so?
I'm not sure I would have joined Mouse, but I think something would have come out of it for sure. Because obviously when you're not going to get banned, then you're just going to stay where you are. So I would have kept playing Face It, FPL. And I don't know, whatever team would have given me a chance. I guess the Face It office thing obviously did help and gave people some confidence to like give me a chance. But I mean, no one knows. Maybe nothing would have turned out as well. So like, it's an interesting road to go as well.
What about if someone turned up today in FPL and they played exactly the same as you did back then, just winning all these clutches out of nowhere? Would you think they cheated? Do you think, like, was it reasonable people actually accused potentially that you cheat? Were you too good?
No, I don't think so. People wouldn't accuse so much. I think what happened back then was that there's like these always in over a certain amount of matches, not every match, there's like a moment which is like a very well-played situation by me. And like I read what, let's say, all of my Acer or Flush or these JLV, like these guys are doing, you know, who were kind of suspicious at me at first. And then yeah, when I play like a good clutch against them or a good situation against them, it makes them suspicious. But that happens like over a big amount of matches, not like every single match. There's like these really small details and really small scenarios which made them suspicious. But I think, yeah, in the bigger picture, you would obviously play like a standard tier one player kind of.
If people think of the original classic Mouse Sports, where it was you, Sonny, Oscar, that lineup that had all the success in the finals and got to like top two in the world or whatever. If you yourself think back on it now, Robs, who was Robs in that team? Like, was your style even like now? Was your positions like now? Who was Robs in that team?
I always think of myself back then. I was always like a third wheeler kind of. You know, obviously, Oscar was the main star of that team back then, and then Sonny was kind of the star rifler roles. So I was just kind of filling in. When I did join Mouse, I think the positions I received, I still play them, like all of them, to this day.
Right.
So like, I've always been in a place which I think suits me very well. And back then, I was just filling in and doing my job as kind of an anchor and a lurker on the T sides. And yeah, just being a third wheeler, I would say. And it was a good learning process because I had quite experienced guys around me, and they had like their own voices in the team on how to play. So I could just, you know, do my own thing and not really lean into so much into like communicating and making plays. Like I had that stuff from them. So I could, yeah, just do my own thing. And I think that was a learning process because I learned a lot of that from those players, also from Chris J, also from, you know, all the players who have been with me in Mouse over the years to, like, yeah, just become into a player I am nowadays, which is compared to back then. I have way more initiative, play with way more, like, risk and just make quality plays and believe in my own talent and, aim, I guess.
Back when that lineup was around, even though you did win the Star Series, I can tell people there's one word that I need to explain why that team didn't win more tournaments. It's called Astralis. It's also the reason a lot of people didn't win tournaments. But your team especially, man alive, you could never avoid these fuckers in the bracket. And spoiler, they did win every single game. So the question isn't why didn't you beat them. I understand that, mate. I actually watched a lot of teams that couldn't beat them. My question is this, just what's it like to play against the Prime Astralis? Like, give me a sense of what a game's like. What's so tricky about it?
I think Prime Astralis, they always knew where you were going. Like, so when you're on T side and they're playing CT, like, you had any idea you could think of, they were already a step ahead, and like, you could feel that they knew before you go into it. I think that was the hardest part. When you're like playing train, there's not much to do on train T side, and then you're playing against Astralis. Like, you can't execute anywhere. Like, you have Zipniks locking down B, Device rotating everywhere with the AWP. It's like they're playing this kind of perfect CS, where obviously the meta and all of that wasn't so developed still, like, even sure. Compared to nowadays, because nowadays CS is still quite different. But back then, they were playing like the perfect anti against the meta back then, and it was so hard to surprise them or, you know, even win aim duels against them, because they were like 5 superstars at that point of time.
By the way, since I would actually say CS2 has made this more famous now, people now know, I mean, it should have been obvious anyway, but like, you aren't just like a nerd at games. You like nerd out on CS, Ton. Like, you, the joke is, one of the reasons why no one's surprised you and Monacy are good in CS2 is it looks like you put 1 billion hours in already, you know, all the fucking smokes, the pushes, the weird bugs and stuff. Were you always like that in CSGO? Like, were you always someone who was nerding out and trying to get dig down to the detail? Like, did you individually know all the weird smokes and stuff in CS?
Definitely, I was that kind of guy. I think in CSGO, I had quite a few smokes, which only I could throw when I was like observing tier one matches. No one else was throwing, let's say, like a smoke from Mirage T spawn to B apps on B site, like these across the map smokes or like near pixel smokes, which are hard to throw, but you can, if you put enough time to learn and see what makes the difference, you could do them on a regular basis. But I did do that definitely in CSGO. I was the guy who was finding a lot of smokes and pushing some new theory in. Well, like in the recent years, maybe not so much in the beginning of my first few years in my career, but now definitely since the online era, I've been a lot more into theory and seeing where I can get an edge, sort of. But it was hard in CSGO. Obviously, now in CS2, everything is new, so it makes a bigger difference right now.
When the lineup changed and Carrigan joined, this is something I talked to him about in his reflections. I noticed he actually did think about it himself. The what if for me always, even though the lamp that he did make with Walksake and Frozen turned out to be good and by the end of the year won those championships, the what if to me always was, what if you could have just slotted Carrigan into the old mouse? You know, what if Sonny and Oscar had stayed? The team just remains and essentially, I don't know, Stick Awesome leaves and then Christian becomes the support and Carrigan just takes over as Nigel. What do you think that lineup could have been like?
I think it could have definitely rivaled like the Astralis and FaZe back then. It was a big what if. I think the players weren't so happy to play with Carrigan back then, but it is what it is. And I think,
is there anything you'd ever heard? Like, had you ever heard a weird rumor or something like maybe he chokes or he's too controlled? Had you ever heard anything behind the scenes that would suggest he had a bad rep or something?
I hadn't at the time, no. Right. But even if I would have, I would have, you know, first, like, speak to Carrigan and see how it turns out, right. And maybe give him a try. Like, I would always see what the guy is for myself first.
What about the other question about that, like the lineup that was then set, the Woxic, Sonny 1, etc., is I kind of set it up earlier. So if you think about it, you were playing the same Prime Astralis, but obviously in the previous year in 2018 with the old lineup with Sonny and Oscar. And obviously the one problem that team had was the weakest position was probably in game leader. Like, it was Chris Schaaf. People don't know. Like, he himself would tell you he'd only switched to that role. So like, the team was very good, but obviously if your weak spot is in game leader, you're going to have a hard time against Astralis. The difference was when you had the lineup with Carrigan, people might remember that EPL match was epic. Like, he actually looked like he had like a fucking masterclass calling. What was it like to have Carrigan calling as opposed to when people just take the role on? What is Carrigan like as an IGL in the mouse team? Not now, in the mouse team.
Yeah, in the mouse team, definitely what excelled was just his micromanaging and mid-round calling. I think that's what gave us an edge in some of those matches in EPL and matches against Astralis where we ended up winning. It's definitely him micromanaging and having like this strong voice and making people believe in the call. That really helped, I would say, because we obviously we had some players who had like different personalities, but he could, you know, force everything away and make sure people listen to him. And if someone wanted to make a play, he could shut it down and tell people to gather up and let's do an execute or some stuff like this. So with him, it was much easier to play, I would say, because he did a lot of micromanaging. And we were like a pretty young roster, the core of me, Frozen, and Voxic back then. So that's also a plus. And yeah, when you play against those matches against Astralis, obviously those were in EPL, that was like in semis. So in those moments where you are on stage and the pressure is the highest, that's also where Carrigan, I would say, calls the best. Like he gets into that flow zone. And yeah, when he's in that, it's really easy to play as a player. I mean, for me, I just kind of do my own job as a lurker and an anchor still in that period of time. And I just try to see where I can poke the bear or where I can find my own gaps or timings. And it kind of just worked out in the bigger picture.
Right. When you had that lineup, obviously one of the things that cut that lineup short was we had to go online and then the results weren't as good and Carrigan left, Christie retired, all that jazz that people know. But it's an obvious what if question to ask. To me, if people think about where this team was before Katowice and we went online, like aside from Katowice, which was one of the only results that wasn't good, you'd had the five finals in a row. It was looking great. Like this is actually in theory one of the strongest LAN teams. So the question that's an obvious what if to me is what if there had been a spring major in 2020? What, how do you think that mouse could have done?
I think we could have gone playoffs, definitely. That was a standard for us back then. I think we had a lot of success in like the last five, even half a year of like from since we won the tournament in Asia, I think the,
phase with the CSGO Asia Championship or whatever it's called, right?
Yeah. That's also a funny story because what happened there is like I think we were down 11-15 against Tai Lu and Voxic won the 1-on-3 clutch.
Yeah, if people and, don't know, if he lost this 1v1, the tournament was over, you were out, right?
Yeah, and we make jokes that if he lost that clutch, we wouldn't have won any of the tournaments.
Oh, sure, right?
Yeah,
probably true.
So that clutch kind of gave us the streak. But I think, our standard was pretty high going into like the next year there. And I think playoffs was the expectation, definitely. And I think we were probably one of the few favorites for the trophy next to Astralis then. And can't even remember the
team. Navi or something.
Navi, yeah. So I think we were in the candidates for to win the tournament, let's say top three, top four. And I mean, that was prime position for us. We peaked, I think, at the right time, but then COVID hit and unfortunately it took it away from us.
Right. In the other Mouse Sports team, you had won the odd trophy. In this one, you won ESL Pro League, which is a big tournament with all the best teams there. When you actually win trophies, does it change how you see yourself? Do you see yourself as like a legit topper? Does it matter? Was it something you were always thinking about? Like, I haven't got any trophies. I want to win trophies.
Winning trophies definitely like changes your perspective, because it's one thing seeing all the teams do it, but then you do it yourself and you realize that, well, that's how it is, you know. It's very simple in a way, but also the road there to get there is always tough, but it always feels insanely good to win a tournament, you know, when you have to travel long distances and you get back on a plane back home. It just sucks every time you lose. But when you win, you don't care at all. And you can't wait to go to the next tournament because you have this emotion inside you and this fire that, you know, you kind of reignited. So I'm always happy to win tournaments, and it honestly changes your perspective a bit. Yeah.
Right. One thing I did ask you about in that talk to Thorin past interview we did, which is a relevant question now, is I pointed out that you were one of the players that inspired me to make that video where I suggested that if you're a pro player, even if you intend on staying in a team, always test the market, like see what offer you would get from another team. And then the idea is you can go back and do a counter offer with your team. Now, actually, it turns out, as you said in that interview, actually, you already had a very good offer for Mouse, even though people think of Mouse as like an Ents type team where people get paid like 10K a month or whatever. I can tell people, like, as far as I know, you were making like very good money. I think you even said you took a slight pay cut to go to FaZe. So if people can, in their brain, we're talking like 25 to 30, it'd be somewhere in that range. So I've heard actually they did for that year when you stayed in Mouse the extra year online, they did pay you well. So I can understand that part of your career. You knew the other players, but do you ever look back and regret that year, mate? Because the problem is, even though individually you had good stats, it's probably part of how you got into FaZe. I'm sure you could have gone to better teams before then. And that year was kind of a write-off, if you know what I mean. Like, Mouse was just okay that year, right? What were your thoughts about that extra year you did?
Honestly, I could have only gone to one team, I think.
Oh, right. Okay.
Back then, because, well, the problem was that we peaked right before COVID. And that was the time when we re-signed new contracts.
Right.
So we had just signed two-year contracts just when COVID started. So after a year, that's when Carrigan left. And then I still had like slightly more than a year left on my contract. And Mouse were not happy to like entertain any offers except for like buyouts over $1 million, maybe. Yep. So there was like only one team interested to pay that amount. I'll say it was Complexity.
Oh, okay.
They were ready to pay that amount.
Was the idea they were going to like build a team around you like they do with the Legion now? Was the idea, did they give you like a good offer, like a good pitch, just what they would do with you?
I didn't explore that path that
right
to that depth. I just did reach out to Mouse to see if there's any teams willing to buy me out, and Complexity was one of them.
Oh, right.
As far as I understand, and then. Yeah, I just had to kind of sit out my contract if I wanted to join FaZe, because I was obviously the key piece for Mouse back then, and they were not, obviously happy to let me go.
Right, one question I'm going to ask you about now, but it's going to come up in this interview, because spoiler, if you play as a lurker and you win a lot of insane clutches, you're going to get accused of baiting a lot. That just goes with the territory. That's understandable, right? In this particular extra year you played in Mouse, I actually think people over-scrutinized you on this exact idea of whether you were selfish, because they knew you were already a top player and you've stuck around for another year and you didn't go elsewhere. Because I actually remember a lot of the analysts actually criticized you at the end of Mouse, that they thought once you kind of in your brain knew you were going to go to FaZe, it was a few months away and you were finishing out the LAN circuit. Remember the end of 2021, we did the LANs again. Some of them think you just played selfish. What would you say to that? Like, they think you just kind of just baited people and didn't try to sacrifice yourself. What would you say?
I don't think I played selfish, definitely not. It may obviously seem that way, because when you're in my roles, it kind of depends on how your team does in the match. If you get smacked all the time, then obviously, I'm more often last alive. I'm more often in these scenarios, which are just unwinnable, let's say. So, yeah, I mean, that happened more often in that team because we weren't so successful at the end. But, I mean, what can I do? It is what it is, I would say. I think I play the same as I do always. It's always so subjective to how successful you are in terms of the bigger picture, and then it also boils down to in the small details, like from round to round to match to match.
When you finished in that team, obviously, just as Carrigan went to FaZe and left you behind, the person you left behind was Frozen, who's now joined you again in FaZe, right? The guy you played with, and then in the meantime in Mouse, has he changed? Do you think is he still the same guy but just older? Is he the same type of player? Who is Frozen since you left him, basically?
Maybe I haven't had enough time to see how he's changed still. I think we've only had like a few weeks of playing together now. But he's definitely more mature. He has more concrete way of playing, like the ideas he brings, and like the stuff he brings on the table is more mature, and he knows what he wants, I think, which maybe compared back to then, he was more sometimes being told to what to do or being fed ideas and this sort of stuff. But, you know, now he's been in a position where he has to be the star, which he was in Mouse now. So he's had that learning process and how he needs the team to play and stuff like this. So I think that's what's changed for him mostly. And coming into this team, I think it's a very good aspect to have because, you know, he is coming into this team with high expectations, and when you have that experience already under your belt, it's going to help.
When you actually did join FaZe Clan and reunite with Kerrigan, it said, if people remember, the FaZe Clan up they had before, where Olaf was in that spot, was an all right team. Like, look, it was a LAN team. It could make the playoffs of a tournament, you know, but it wasn't going to win big trophies. Now, what's funny is, because of some of the criticism of Mouse, actually, everyone didn't just say, right, if Rob joins this team, they're going to be the best. Look, I'll toot my own horn. I have a tweet that basically says that at the beginning of 2022, but you know what? Everyone can't be me, can they? But most people actually thought, like, you know, maybe there's some other pieces I have to figure out. Because to be fair, if everyone remembers, some of the players that were already in FaZe didn't play like that. Like Brocky didn't used to play like that in 2021. He was popping off in 2022. Twists, obviously, he hadn't been there for that long. Right? When you joined FaZe, what were your own expectations? Like, did you really think, like, I'm supposed to win tournaments immediately? Did you yourself think maybe there's like a ramp-up period here? What were your expectations?
I think my expectations were kind of like just to be this sort of playoff team. At least in the start, because that's what I was kind of missing in Mouse. We had a lot of group stage exits in the year before FaZe in Mouse. So, yeah, just coming into FaZe, becoming this sort of consistent playoff performer, sometimes get trophies. But, you know, what happened, I think no one could have expected. I don't even know if we set any goals in the beginning.
Oh, right.
FaZe. Okay. We just kind of clicked, sort of, and then... The rest is history. We definitely did not expect all of that.
Right. One of the things that I actually thought was crazy as well was, like, I mean, people know the ins and outs of the story because it's being told now of the Katowice thing. But everyone forgets it was two of you that kept getting ill. It was you and Rain combined that JKS had to rip. People just remember he replaced one of you. So obviously you were the first one. I just want to get it from your perspective. So if people don't know, the weirdest thing about this story is that if you'd already been at the venue, it could have been, maybe you could have played, but it's because you were at like a boot camp away. So then you had to like quarantine there and then travel later and play whatever was left to kind of it. And by the way, the part people forget about is you obviously had to hope that they were in the fucking tournament still. Like if they just got banged out immediately, it would have just been over, wouldn't it? So give me your perspective. You were really just one day you wake up, you do the test and you find out like, I'm just trapped here. And then you're just what? Watching the fucking tournament from your PC in the home. What was going on? Give me some thoughts.
Yeah, the story is we assembled the team, I joined the team. I think we played last groups online, and then after that, Katowice was coming up, and we was going to have a bootcamp before the tournament. And we all fly into the bootcamp, which is supposed to be 7 days. And I think we played the first day, and in the middle of the first day, I kind of feel ill, and I decide to take a test, as is recommended at that time. And it turns out positive, and then, you know, from that moment of time, I'm stuck in the hotel room, and we're in Warsaw for the bootcamp. So Katowice is like a few hour,
yes,
three, four hour car ride. So it's a long way there. And so I think the rest of the team basically just kept playing, I think, for a day. And they decided to go to Katowice, I think, 5-6 days early, just when the bootcamp basically started.
Right.
Because if one of them got ill, they also would have been locked down.
Oh, right, I see.
So it had to be isolated in Warsaw.
Right.
And in that case, if they got ill, they would have had to done the same.
Because if people don't know, if you're actually at the hotel, you can play from the hotel then, but they just don't let you do that if you're in Warsaw, presumably, right?
Yeah, exactly. So they want you to be on site.
Fair enough. Then
I could have, if I did get ill in Katowice, I could have played the first match there in the hotel, but that didn't happen.
What about, though, obviously the weird thing about that was, like I say, you actually got to come back during the tournament, though. They kept it stayed alive in the tournament, and then you were able to have a nice run and get your legs under you. Like, by the end of the tournament, you were having a really good series. Like, give me some thoughts, because look, in the past when we're talking about winning trophies, we are talking about like Star Series, which look, the field is awesome, but you are just in that fucking cyber arena. It's not some giant stadium. When you win the ESL Pro League, look, it's cool to beat Astralis like in home territory, but ESL Pro League isn't like IEM Cologne. Mate, to win Katowice, everyone knows this, like aside from the majors, Katowice and Cologne, right? Everyone wants that trophy. That stage is legendary. Everyone's seen everyone on it. What was it like to actually get to the final and win in this first tournament?
It was an important moment for me because, well, it was 2022 was now like the, I think, sixth, maybe fifth or sixth year of my career.
Okay.
So basically, I've in those 5-6 years, I had never been to a playoff stage in Katowice.
Oh, right. Right.
So that was like an important moment for me to finally be on one of those stages, because obviously, you always look at those tournaments every year and every player wants to be there, but I've never had reached that before, and it was finally the moment. And yeah, I mean, I think I to start out the tournament when I first came back after having COVID, I think obviously I was starting out cold in the matches. I had not played with the team for like a week straight. I could just play like deathmatch and play on my own when I was isolated. But I was definitely warming up for the playoffs, and I think we had good results, even with JKS. And when playoffs came, I think everyone were playing with like nothing to lose. And that's the kind of mentality you always want to have. So it was important we had that. And yeah, everything was clicking from that moment on. And I was just feeling the arena as well. Like, I think I played exceptionally well in that playoff. I had some good series against Gambit. The final against G2 obviously is a historic one. It was just funny, like you were like stuck in the loop on that Mirage game.
It just never ended, the Ortiz, right?
Yeah. And then finally it was JKS who won a 1-on-2 clutch in the end, which put the nail in the coffin on Mirage, yes. Which was just insane to witness as well.
What about, obviously, Carrigan actually mentioned this to me in his interview. He said one of the reasons why he was always haunted by Katowice is because of that cool thing ESL did where if you win, you get to be on one of the steps as you go up to the stage. You must be on there now. Like this year when you went there, you must see FaZe Clan, right? Is it dope to see that? No, it's you.
It is extremely awesome to have your name on that staircase. I walked up that stairs. You could see all the names, even from back from 1.6, some of the names are still there.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
So it's an honor to have your name there, but, you know, it's another thing to see it as well. So we definitely have to reach playoffs to witness that from my own eyes. But I'm really happy to have my like the team you played with and win and then have your name there. I think that's, you know, it's one for the history books, and just incredibly happy.
The other thing is as well, one thing I always try to do in my interviews is recall the context of the time, because obviously now when FaZe won all these tournaments in the Grand Slam and the Major, now everyone will say it was obvious and, you know, oh, look, they had all these top 20 players. But like I say, people weren't saying that at the beginning. In fact, even when you won this event, if you remember, the whole thing was like, right, maybe they should like change players. Was it a fluke? Is it because of the like Ukraine-Russia thing people were trying to imply? Because obviously all the CIS teams potentially were affected. Right after this, though, when you guys won Pro League, like, did you yourself get a sense now when you win this back-to-back tournament, it's like, maybe we are the number one team, like maybe we just win everything now?
I think our tournament runs were always, you know, kind of close. We never won in like any dominant fashion.
True.
So when we won Pro League, I think it slowly started kicking in that, you know, maybe we're on this streak and everything is going well at the moment. We've had a lot of close moments. I think I'm not sure if the Pro League group stage was even close, because I think
you lost Twents in it.
We were pretty close to being eliminated before the playoff stage.
I think it was where like someone had to win a game to keep you. I think maybe like Vitality or someone had to win a match, right, to keep you in the tournament. Something. Yeah.
It was a story, because back when you had those group stages and you get a result of like 3-2 overall, and you could still be eliminated.
Oh yes,
so that was like a funny part.
Yes,
but we did end up going through. Just having these close tournaments but still winning them gives you a little bit of confidence, and you carry on that to the next tournament. I think the Major was obviously an interesting one. We started out with a loss against Ents, I think, in the best of one stage, And then it was a match against Cloud9 where we played, or Cambit back then, where we played Nuke against them. I think they accidentally, you know, left Nuke in. We had a deep talk if we should pick Nuke or ban it. Like, are we doing the right thing? But, we just decided to capitalize on the mistake and obviously feel a bit remorseful, but it is what it is.
You've got to take the win, haven't you? If they hand you the win, you've got to pick it up, right?
I have to take the edge there.
Yeah, of course.
So, I think once you get to that stage, we're obviously a different team as well. Everyone talks about it, but we are a stage team, definitely. I think Rain is always one of the biggest arena players ever. He is really pumped up and he takes his game to the next level when he gets to that stage. So it was just the tough part of going to a playoff. And then when you get to the playoff, it was kind of easier to play because everyone is living in the moment. And when the pressure is the highest, I think we have an edge over some other teams because of the experience and just the nature of the players.
Right, admit it to me. You can say no if it's not true, but if it's true, you've got to admit it, right? When you were playing the final and the final's opponent was Na'Vi, the real Na'Vi with Boomit still and Simplitzer, was there any concern of this might be a tough match or they might just win?
There was definitely, not concern, but we definitely knew it's going to be a very tough match. They're obviously the title defender at that point.
Yes.
So they're gonna try their hardest to beat our asses. And I think it started out very well in that final. We had a really good lead on T-side Inferno. But then we swapped sides. We even won the pistol round, but then I think we were up 12-4 maybe we're up. And then they started coming back to the point where they were 15-14.
Looked like they were going to win, right? Yeah. I mean, you had that 1v1 against Simple, right?
Yeah.
By the way, he mentioned it in the reflections. It's in his head, mate. Like that 1v1 where he doubles back at mid or whatever and you shoot him. I think he's triggered by that.
yeah. That's the one moment I also watch back sometimes.
That has to be satisfying, right? You basically mind-gamed him, right?
Yeah, the funny thing for me is we played NIP on Inferno on the quarterfinals, I think.
Yes.
And I had the identical situation in that moment. That's when I actually had a flashback. I knew when I was in that 1v1, I knew that this has happened to me before on this stage already. But I was considering my options. I think in the NIP game, I pushed mid instantly. I was in short and Simple in that scenario was down mid somewhere. So in the NIP game, I would have pushed mid instantly. But now in the Na'Vi game, I took my time and maybe he makes a mistake or maybe I just play my position and let him make the play. And that's what I decided to do. And I'm just grateful I took that 50-50 in the right way. Because if we lost that Inferno, it would have been devastating because we were up by so much. And I mean, obviously, it isn't a phase game and it doesn't go to an overtime. So we went to overtime and ended up closing there. So we were even more hyped after that. And yeah, closing it on Nuke was just an easier job after that.
When you win the major, after all the... I mean, you even had all the online era, obviously, where you can't even go to a major. There aren't big lands. In your career, you are someone people know. You are a fan of the game. You're not just some guy who came out and said, wow, I'm good at the game. You've always been around Counter-Strike. What does it mean to Rops to win the major in Counter-Strike?
I think nowadays you get the trophy in game and you get your name on the trophy. I think that's one of the coolest things you can ever have.
Oh, you do the flusher where you pull up the in-game item and watch the trophy experience. You do that, do you? Okay.
Yeah. So that's one of the
things. That's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
But I mean, winning the major, it's a dream for any player and has been for mine as well. And it's kind of makes you think what's next because obviously there's not anything else to do than just to do it again at this point, unless they create another tournament with higher prestige. But yeah, for now, you can just repeat it and do it all over. Because it is the highest, most prestigious tournament anyone can win in CS. And it again, gives you another perspective on your career and on even life, because it kind of makes you reflect on what's next. And should you do it all over again? And I think I definitely want to do it all over again.
Were you someone who actually used to think about winning the major or have it as a dream? Are you someone where when it happened, was it a surprise that you actually did it? Like, when you win it, do you feel like, sure, like, I was always supposed to, was it always destiny for you to win the major?
I'm definitely not destiny. I don't think that's never been the case, but I think it's just, well, it's being rewarded for the hard work. I think that's the biggest part. But obviously when you win, it's honestly just a huge disbelief. The Antwerp major as well was, I think, the arena with the most participants attending.
Oh, right.
Ever.
I mean, it's definitely very full, yeah.
I think it was one of the most packed arenas ever in Antwerp. So doing that in that moment was just unbelievable. And I was in disbelief. And I mean, I was thinking of what had just happened for the next few days for sure, because you don't really, you know, realize instantly. And then it sort of hits you that you've actually done it. I mean, then you ride on this high for a long time. Like, you go into the next tournament so happy and stuff like this until you maybe go for like group stage exit, and then like reality hits you again. But yeah, until you lose again, it's unbelievable.
Right. One of the things I did want to ask about is when you get to the FaZe Clan team in this year, right? I feel like people have been too simplistic with how they characterize Rain's position in the team. Because even though as an older player, and obviously with the young stars, I'm sure there are plenty of times, like on T side, you obviously take some crap rolls where you're going to get killed a lot. But like, for example, the reason it can't be, like, he's not really Sticko and Mouse like people try to imply. And the reason I know it's not true, Rops, is because if everyone thinks of Nuke, he plays fucking outside on CT. Like, guys, that is where you get a lot of frags. It's a really good position if you want to have like big kills. So obviously what that implies to me is within FaZe, there's clearly like a respect for Rain that's different from just he's an old vet who plays all the crap. Well, clearly, and sometimes he does get his spot on CT or on a map or wherever he'd be strong, right? How do you see Rain from inside FaZe? How does he get used and out? What type of player is he to you?
I think the most easiest and maybe a bit explicit way of putting it is just he's the guy who plays with his dick out all the time.
Okay.
He's obviously an arena player, and you want to have that sort of player in those positions, like on outside on nuke, when you're constantly basically in charge of how the round plays out and what plays you want to make. And, you know, you kind of have the initiative all the time on T sides when he's entering or when he's being set up for like an execute, or not execute, but just like a map control thing. So when he's in these positions and the type of player he is as like an arena player, that's like when he gets his fuel going, you know. And for him it's super easy because that's just his nature of personality. And I think his role is, you know, obviously also very well defined, and he has these big games. He can take over. He can win the MEP at the major in Sydney now. So all of these things, just add a lot of respect to him. And everyone knows the boundaries in the team, and everyone knows how to just set up the rounds. And it's nice to play with a guy like him.
If I ask you a bit about Brokey, this is an unusual player, so I've got to set it up a bit. So first of all, if people remember, at the beginning of 2022, he was the MVP of that kind of Eats It Run. He had fucking bonkers stats if no one went back. And for me, when you joined the team, he did take like a step up. I don't know what it was, whether it's just an individual form. But a thing I think is very interesting about his role within FaZe is it feels like he's the balance to you. See, one of the reasons for me why you're able to play super passive at times is he is a guy who just makes things happen on T-side. Like, he's another player where, even though he's an AWPer, it's like, I don't really feel like he's whatever the role sniper is. He just does stuff with the AWP. He just kills people with it. He just runs out and shoots people. Like, the joke is he really does use it like a fucking mobile shotgun or whatever that whack thing Valve said was when they nerfed Kenny S with the AWP years back. Like, he has, it's clearly a different perspective on what that gun's for. Like, how do you see this player within your team? And do you have some similar thought about, like, I feel like the balancing phase is one of the things that's quite impressive. Like, the styles of players fit together, if you know what I mean.
The balance thing is definitely true. I think it also translates into outside of the game because we understand each other really well. Like, Brokey is this kind of person who is more like, he's more this like closed type of person, keeps himself most of the times. but I've kind of grown up the same way, and we also live in the same region, so I've been brought up the same way, and we have these like cultural similarities. So we have this really natural chemistry outside the game, and it definitely goes inside the game as well. It's obviously super easy to play with him because he's not so demanding, but he in the mid rounds it's sometimes gets really crazy with him because he can be demanding, obviously, but he's naturally not. But he always knows when to do it or how to do it, and he can move around the whole team basically and control like a round in a hole if he sees like an opportunity or something to go for. But like this mid rounds and end rounds is where he definitely excels. He is more passive in the start of the rounds, but it's obviously we're playing to our own strengths. So just having me and him in a 2-on-5 or 2-on-4, it can always end up us winning. So yeah, just setting up the rounds where me and him can activate, I think in the end of the rounds as well, is always going to work good for us.
On this topic of like the balance of FaZe Clan, another thing I've always thought, I mean, even though as a team collectively and in the end of games, FaZe is very famous for being a clutch lineup. But I would say the strange thing about the team is individually, every player has a reputation for being clutch, and in this team definitely was able to win. Like, you know, if you watch a pro match, if you're sat at home yourself, you're not at an event, you're watching, I don't know, Na'Vi play against G2. I won't say names, but there's certain players where you see them in the 2v2 and you just think, well, they're not going to fucking win it. In your team, it felt like every player was capable when, like, at least the round's still on. It's not over. It's not just going to save necessarily. What do you think of that aspect?
It happens quite often. Like, sometimes, in practice, sometimes you kind of lose focus and you start talking to your own teammates when, like, the round's over and rain's alive in a 1-on-4 and you start talking in the chat, like, what should we do better? What's the mistake here? And stuff like that. And then suddenly he won the round and like, oh, what the fuck just happened? So, like, those kind of scenarios happen quite often to us. But yeah, I think it's just like a perfect combination of having the talent for it, the raw aim, the personalities in our team, and just the mixture is kind of perfect to be this clutch team. I think over the years, everyone has grown into these sorts of players, and everyone has so many. I think we're like one of the most experienced teams, and maybe like one of the oldest teams in on average, when you take in account into all the ages in our team. So we have a lot of experience in under our belts, and I think that factors in as well.
Right. Obviously, people will know if they're keeping track in their head. Like, wait a minute, so we did the Katowice Pro League Antwerp. Obviously, we're going to talk about Cologne, right? These are all the tournaments that you won. But I'm actually going to ask it in a very specific way, though, Rops, which is, even though your team won it, it was an epic fucking final. I actually thought you had kind of a quiet tournament. Like, you had a few maps, like, that were big, but there were some maps you were a bit kind of quiet on. Would you agree?
I definitely had a map, which I remember was the final map of the event. It was Nuke against Na'Vi.
Yep.
And
you're watching like the rest of us.
thank God we won that one, because I would have been so disappointed in myself if we had lost that, because that was probably one of the most important maps of my career, first of all. So it's, you know, you finally get to have a chance to win Cologne, but it's like, second thing is, if you shit the bed and then you kind of blame yourself for losing a Cologne, that's another thing. So I'm really happy for my team is getting it over the line.
Do you ever actually do that, by the way? Do you, if you individually have a bad game and it's in a final or a semi-final, and you feel like you were the, do you ever feel like you're the reason you lost the tournament or worry about it?
I don't think so. I don't think I've had a moment like that so far. Maybe in the future, who knows? I mean, it does help when you play consistently good all the time, so you have less of those maps. I think it's sometimes in a match which is really close, let's say like a 16-14 in CSGO, and then you look at a round where you could have, you know, made it a different story, and then you could not do that mistake or whatever. I think those moments happen quite often, but not in a perspective where you cost the tournament completely. Maybe only in elimination matches, but in the bigger picture, no, not so much. But that could have been a first for Cologne, definitely.
Right. One thing I always do wonder about is when someone does what you did, you do the jump from mouse to face. Obviously, Frozen himself just did it, although his mouse was a bit better. When you essentially get the chance to finally go to a team where the perspective is, right, everything's possible now. You could win the Major, you could win the Grand, you could win everything now. It's just like, how good are you and how good is the team? Even so, you don't really expect it all to happen immediately. You think, you know, maybe I win a tournament now, maybe win the next Major, whatever. To win all these tournaments in a row, I mean, there was only a couple you dropped at this point in time. You'd won like four tournaments that year, and you'd won Cologne and Katowice and the Major. What was it like to just have this, like, almost be bombarded by success so soon in FaZe?
I think with FaZe, it was kind of meant to be, because you are a team of this sort of superstar caliber. FaZe historically being the first team, or like, you know, Kingwin before, to step out in the international scene and assemble this sort of superstar roster. So I think with FaZe, you're always, as a team, you're always destined for success, I would say. And I think it was maybe a bit premature, and I don't know just winning those tournaments so early in me coming into the roster was just unbelievable. Obviously, I think it's still unbelievable to this day because it was so unexpected. But we definitely capitalized on like the early success we had with JKS, and I think the momentum gave us a lot of success as well. And then just constantly working on top of that, and I think no one really stepped off the gas, and that's what also helped. And everyone, I think when we won Katowice and I was finally into the team, like the other guys, they were like hungry for a long time. And when I finally came to the team, it was like, finally is a chance to, you know, be the number one team and have a chance at the Major.
Right. Obviously, in some of your past mouse lineups, you have also had a similar sort of, like, I would just call it like a trio of stars. And as long as everyone has a different role, the cool thing about having sort of a by committee instead of just one Zewu type guy is obviously it means that someone can have an off game. Like we're talking about, you can have a tournament that's not so dope, but maybe Rain steps up or fucking Brokey goes mad or Twist sounds great. What's it been like to be like that in FaZe? You obviously had it in some past teams, but I actually imagine it must be a different sort of like, You must just frame things differently mentally compared to some of the names like I referenced to. Sometimes some people have to hard carry to win a game. Like, what's it like to be in a team where you can sometimes have an off game and win still?
Well, it's nice to have an off game and it still win, obviously, so that's the first thing. But I think it kind of it scales up. Like, the better players you have, the more off games you can have and still win, I guess. And I could still have an off game in mouse and win a game here or two, but in FaZe you could win a game like that quite often because anyone could step up, and it just does make your life easier and more stress free. You don't have to be worried all the time that you fucked up this round and now you might lose the game, because we win so many rounds from when we're under like a man, or we're in a very bad scenario, but we still turn it around, and like we win unwinnable kind of rounds, you know? So that's always like an X factor we can look into and sometimes even rely on when we're feeling it. And it quite often also brings us over the line and win a tournament. And I think if we keep having that, I think, you know, it's we can always win a tournament. But when we stop having that, because we are a team which always plays every game really close, you go into the overtime. So when you don't have that X factor, it's often we lose a game. Like, I think one of the games which is similar to this story is the game against Ents in Dallas with like 60 rounds of Agent. I think there's a lot of clutches from both teams there, but there's so many from Ents, I think, which we could have played better. So I think we were missing, for example, we didn't have that X factor there, I feel like. Normally, it's a game which I would feel FaZe is going to win, but that time we ended up losing. And even if we lose that match, that's like 60 rounds of Ancient. Like, at that point, I'm like proud we've played the match this long. And like, it obviously sucks to lose, but it's, you know, one of the matches for also the history book.
As you say, oftentimes in a lot of the close games, this is when FaZe would somehow rise to the moment and win the epic rounds, right? Did this become like a thing within the team soon enough of like, essentially, like, somehow it doesn't matter how much we're behind or if we're down map one or they win their map, like, somehow we always come back? Was there a sense of that in the team of sort of like, somehow it'll figure itself out, we'll win the game?
It's something you always say, I think, in our team. When you have a bad first half, it's like, don't worry about it, we'll always come back. And it's like this self-assuring thing, which kind of maybe is fake confidence sometimes, but for some players it works, for some it doesn't. So it's just, you know, good to say in whatever position you're in. And even in the pre-matches, when we do a huddle or anything, it's something we always say, that if we start out bad, we can always come back strong. And we hear examples how we did it in the last tournament, how we've done it this tournament, how we did it in that match. And it's a good thing to always remind you of that you've done it before. So what is it this time? And this kind of confidence that you can always take.
Right. What happened at the 2022 IEM Rio Major? Obviously, the main match that people are going to think of is that fucking Bad News Eagle. What happened, mate? I mean, what people forget is this detail. You guys were on fucking series points on the last map. Like, I thought it was over. I was like, great, brilliant. Like, on to the next. And then suddenly from there, the whole tournament just unravels. What happened against that? Did you actually think you were going to win this game? Did you know they were a tough team? What happened?
I think it all starts from the match against Cloud9. I think was our first matchup in the Rio tournament. And that match, we played against Cloud9. We were up on Overpass by quite a bit, and we should have closed it and been up 1-0 and case closed. And I think it started from there, because we ended up losing to a Cloud9 comeback. And then we lose against Vitality. Like, you go down a match and you face Vitality, who are also like a favorite for the whole tournament.
Yeah, they just won Pro League, yeah.
With Saivu going nuts. So you don't want to meet them, and we meet up with them. And obviously you're coming into Rio, this is obviously a sort of an excuse, but you're playing with some jet lag and you're playing two best of ones in a single day. So just starting out 0-2 is a nightmare at that point. And you got a day to rest, and that's when we face BNE. And they're this sort of team who's like really happy to be in that part of the tournament. They managed to qualify away from challenger stage. So they're pumped up and fired up, and they want to beat anyone in their way, which we also would like to, but they're a tough team to play. I think BNE is kind of similar to how we play. Like, our play styles are very similar.
Right.
We rely on like chaos and aim, and that's what they sort of do as well. And honestly, I can't even remember that match in particular. I know I think I did take a lot of initiative in that game and tried. I think everyone tried their ass to win that match, but it was a rough match, and we lost that one. And I think no one. It's the same like when you win a major, you're in disbelief for a few days, and that sort of thing was like the same thing there. You kind of in disbelief, and you don't understand what had happened, that you actually lost and you were out like in just three matches after being the title defendant in sort of way. So yeah, it was unbelievable for a few days, and I think can't even remember what happened.
One of the tricky things I noticed in this time period at the end of last year, coming into this year, and I mean, obviously 2022, we've recorded this like a couple of days into 2024, so it's going to take a while to reset that. I mean, at the end of 2022, right? The one of the tough things at that point was, it's not like FaZe ever completely went into a slump and fell off. Like, people will know right after this, you almost won that fucking Blast. Like, you were like a round away from winning the Blast four finals, the one that Heroic first won. But after that, you also could then have the tournaments where you just like, you know, sixth place or something and you get blown out. What would you say about FaZe in terms of like consistency? Because I notice it's a bit like the matches themselves. Like we're saying, even when FaZe wins tournaments, it's very rare you're ever stomping people. Like, even a 2-0 will be a close one. How does the team internally handle when there's these ups and downs? Because the problem obviously is, in theory, you weren't a team thinking of making roster moves. Like, you got the team set, you have to just find a way to turn it around. So what was the team like in the ups and downs period? How do you handle it?
I think we always take it very simply. People notably say this Jame lineup is like the one who's like paid by the round, and
sure,
you know, they take it like that. But it's kind of the same for us. Even when you have all these close matches and all these close losses, like a win is a win and a loss is a loss. You obviously review all of the games you can. More often you review the losses than the wins, but you do what you can in terms of like picks and mistakes and stuff. But with ups and downs, you just treat it as it goes. I think, again, a win is a win, so you don't look too much into it, even if it's like a close match. And you always have to look forward to the next game or whatever you have coming up. I think result-wise, yeah, we had a successful year. Then we dropped out in Rio, and then we had a second place in Blast. I think it's just... It's definitely a good year, like overall in the bigger picture. If you look back on the year, I would say, I think we've talked about this internally before, that really the only bad result was Rio, sort of. I think
people don't know, you're always in the playoffs. Like, yeah, there's almost no bad results, yeah, except that one.
So for our standards, I think we had a pretty good year and we weren't so disappointed. But Rio being like a blemish there is definitely a thing to be disappointed of, and it was like the biggest thing we looked up for. And I think when you draw out goals and what the team wants to reach and what we want to achieve, it is the Rio tournament and getting a good result there. So I just think it was important for us to let it go and find a way to forget about it, because I think that was the hardest part of losing in Rio in 0-3 fashion, and then having bad memories of it. And then obviously it's also funny that when you go into the next year in Blast Major, you play VNE again for an elimination match. But yeah,
indeed.
Those things did go how they went, but I think the hardest and most important part was to just try to forget about the bad memory of Rio.
Carrigan told me something ridiculous. Like, internally, you guys even started joking after you'd blown a few of the like Grand Slam chances of like, oh, we're going to fuck it up and just waste it all. Because if people remember, because you won all the tournaments in a row, you had like an insane amount. You had something like, off the top of my head, like 8 chances to win it or whatever. But you'd already blown like, I don't know, 4 or 5 or something at this point until you get to the Pro League, right? Like, did you ever think internally, like, we might just fuck this up? Because even though, like, this is where I feel like if a fan won't understand, it might sound like you're only one tournament away. It's like, there's no only one winner fucking international tier one tournament land. Like, those are hard to win, right?
They're kind of all the same, if you put it that way. I mean, every other team is attending every tournament, yeah. So it's never any difference. It's just sometimes the prestige and the pressure is different in some of the tournaments. But we didn't really be scared of blowing it. I think we still had a lot of chances, as you say. It does really help when you win so much in a row,
sure,
and then have a lot of chances. But when you look at the other side of the coin, it's also like, well, you won all those tournaments, you had your streak, but now you have to win this one, and it's like this kind of mental blockade. So it's a lot of different things and ways to look at it. But in the end, I wasn't that scared of dropping the ball, because we still had chances. And you only really start to think about it, I think, when it's your last one. And we still had a few tournaments to go. But I think when we started out the year in 2023, we just drew out one goal, and that was the Grand Slam. And, you know, we kind of achieved everything the previous year. We won the major, we won Katowice, Cologne. The only thing left to do was the Grand Slam in terms of achieving in CS. That's the only thing left. And every tournament which we had a chance in, we started out with Katowice. We lost to Liquid in like elimination game, and then the next focus was EPL, and like we treated every tournament on the same level.
If I was critical of the Cologne performance you had in 2022, the win at Pro League, which got the Grand Slam, has to be one of your best tournaments ever, right?
I think so. I could agree. I guess it's definitely. Well, statistically, it's one of the tournaments which I had a high, and it's one which is going to stick with me as well, because you do close out the Grand Slam with a good performance, and it's like you get to have a gold bar sitting in your home.
So that's cool.
One, That's one to definitely remember.
Is it really heavy, by the way? Because obviously real gold is actually quite heavy. Is it heavy, the gold bar?
It is not heavy, no. Oh, okay. It's just plated gold.
Oh, I see. Right, okay. Yeah. It still looks dope, though.
It's really cool because you don't get to have these trophies in players' homes and personal trophies, but this the Grand Slam one is like a personal kind of trophy.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. If people don't know, in the modern day, the team org takes the big trophy normally. So, like, you can, in theory, I know in football they make, like, replicas, but they don't do that in esports. So people don't know, even when they win, like, all the majors in Astralis, that's in the Astralis office, not in, like, Glaive's house or something. Yeah, true.
The funny story is we actually got to replicate the major trophy for Antwerp because PGL did allow us to do that.
Oh, and that's cool.
We paid our own fee to, like, to do it, and we had to just pay for the costs. But now we all have, like, a replica of the trophy, and I mean, it's the major trophy, so it's the best one to have, sort of.
I mean, the jokes write themselves on this one, but I'll do it anyway, which is, bizarrely, I heard Vitality didn't bother to pay to replicate their boss. Weird. Who knows why, anyway, right? Well, whatever. I don't normally do jokes on these, but whatever. That was right hanging right there. Come on, you had to. I've had to make a lot of tough choices in my career, but thanks to the support of my Patreon community, the Skrilluminati, I never have to make tough financial decisions. So this video and all the rest on my channel are kindly supported by Ahmed Haju, Frisky, Mac Pugnaccio Rakula, Animosity, Jensen Gore, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and you know it if you've ever heard before, and you'll hear it many times in the future. A special thanks goes out to my main man, Jerry Keys Minion. Do you want to ask a question in my video AMA? Do you want to be part of one of those long discussions where we talk about whatever you like in esports? Do you want teasers? Find out who the upcoming guests are going to be. Or maybe you want to suggest a topic for a future Thorin's Thoughts type video. Well, if any of these perks or others appeal to you, put your money where your mouth is today and join the Skrilluminati by joining the Patreon link in the description box below.